Many of us who have lost loved ones have had the experience of thinking that we see them again, just for a brief moment. We see the tilt of someone's head, a familiar stride glimpsed across the room, someone sitting in their favorite chair where we would expect to see them, and then the sad reality of their death snatches that moment away, and we realize it was just an illusion. This happened to Jesus' followers after he was killed. And for Christians who believed that he was resurrected, it was not an illusion. It was not a hallucination. They believed they were seeing the resurrected Jesus. While most UUs do not believe in the resurrection of the body, these stories resonate with how all of us continue to feel loved ones with us long after they're gone. Studies find that around half of widowed people, both men and women, experience the presence of their spouses. Most often, this happens in the first 10 years of widowhood, and the longer the marriage, the more likely it is to happen. People think they see them, or they just have a sense of their presence. And despite the pang of grief that may come with such moments, most people describe these experiences as comforting. It speaks to the deep bond that they have with their life partner and other close relationships like a parent and child might enjoy. These bonds are not easily or quickly dissolved. One psychologist writes, "Death ends a life, but not necessarily a relationship. Rather than saying goodbye or seeking closure, there exists the possibility of the deceased being both present and absent." Thus, it's normal, even healthy, to think we see departed loved ones, to talk to them and to visit places where we may feel their experience, their presence more keenly. So it's not surprising that Jesus' disciples and the other men and women who were part of his following continued to see him and to feel his presence. They had been with him every day. He was their companion, their friend, their teacher, a charismatic leader for whom many of them had left their homes and their families. Losing him was devastating. But he didn't just die quietly of old age. He was executed by the Romans through crucifixion when he was in his early 30s. His death was sudden, brutal, and painfully public. His followers experienced a wound that was as deep as their bond to him. So it's not surprising that they would continue to sense his presence in powerful and real ways. For the early Christian community, these experiences were evidence that Jesus had been resurrected. Resurrection informed the worldview of some Jews at the time who believed that God would raise the dead to new life and overthrow the forces of evil. Among those Jews holding this belief was the Apostle Paul, whose letters were the earliest Christian writings. They date from 10 to 15 years after Jesus died. If you know the Bible, these are the epistles that we read at the end of the New Testament. In these letters, Paul makes theological claims about Jesus' resurrection, laying the groundwork for the gospel accounts, the stories of Jesus' life that were written as much as 50 years later. These stories describe the experiences that Jesus' followers had with him after he died. And we find that the later the gospel was written, the more details and the more elaborate these stories are of seeing the risen Jesus, which suggests that they are rooted less in historical fact, which would, you know, the earlier stories would be clearer if that was the case, and more in the belief that he had been resurrected based on Paul's writings and Jesus' ongoing presence in the lives of his followers and the community that would become the Christian church. There's a UU curriculum for children that offers a similar explanation of the resurrection. This is adapted from Jesus the Carpenter's Son, which was written in 1945. So that's how early UUs were kind of wrestling with, what do we believe about the resurrection? This book is by Sophia Lyon Foss, who was a Unitarian pastor and teacher who revolutionized religious education. Amelia's nodding. Some of you know her work, yes. She wrote in her book, "The people who followed Jesus were brokenhearted after he died. They struggled to understand why God had allowed their teacher to be killed, Surely someone so connected to God, so overflowing in goodness, did not deserve the punishment of a criminal or a rebel. As these men and women gathered day after day in each other's homes, they began to recall the wonderful experiences that they had had with Jesus. They told one another of times when Jesus was wise, of times when Jesus was kind. The very tone of Jesus' voice and the look on his face would come back to them so vividly that it seemed sometimes as though Jesus were again right there with them. Some of the people had dreams in which Jesus seemed so real that the dreamers could not tell whether they had been asleep or awake when they saw him. Some declared positively that they had seen Jesus again. He had talked with them. The rumor spread that Jesus had actually come out of his coffin, that two of his disciples had seen him, and that several of the women had talked with him. They would see him only for a few moments, and then he would mysteriously disappear again. She concludes, when someone's physical body dies, the people around them who loved and valued them will keep their memory alive, just like the followers of Jesus have remembered his teachings and his spirit long after his death. The four gospel accounts record different stories about the appearances of the risen Jesus, but they don't all agree on the details, which is not uncommon with the gospels. In the book of Matthew, Jesus appeared to the women on Sunday morning as they returned from finding Jesus' tomb empty. Jesus says that they should not be afraid, but they should tell the disciples to go on to Galilee, where the disciples then see Jesus on a mountaintop. Another story describes his appearance to the disciples as they are hiding out in a locked room on Sunday evening. He even eats a piece of fish to prove to them that he's not a ghost. In another gospel, the same story happens, but then Jesus appears a second time in the same room a week later because Thomas, who missed that first appearance, did not believe the other disciples. Can we blame him? That's the root of the expression, doubting Thomas. In all of these stories, Jesus' followers are startled, but they find his presence comforting and reassuring. But there are several stories about Jesus appearing to the disciples in which they don't recognize him at first. In one story, he appears to Mary Magdalene just outside the empty tomb on Sunday morning. She mistakes him for the gardener until he calls her by name. He also appears to the disciples who have returned to Galilee and have gone fishing. And again, they don't know it's Jesus until he advises them from the shore. They're still out in the boat. He tells them to cast their nets on the other side of the boat. And having come up empty all night, their nets are now so full they can barely haul them in. But perhaps the most puzzling story is in the Gospel of Luke, where Jesus comes along alongside two of his followers who are walking from Jerusalem, where the crucifixion and the resurrection happened, about 7 miles to their home in a village called Emmaus. Jesus walks along with them for miles. He explains the prophecies about the Messiah and shares other insights from the scriptures. When they arrive at their home, they invite him to stay the night since it's late. And at the dinner table, he blesses the bread, breaks it, and gives each of them a piece. And only then do they recognize that it's him, and he vanishes at once. Now, Bible scholars come up with all kinds of explanations about why his followers don't recognize him. It was dark, they had tears in their eyes, they didn't expect to see a dead man. Some passages even say that God prevented their eyes from recognizing that it was him. But these stories make more sense when we look at them as metaphors, as allegories, rather than as historical fact. And if instead of asking why they don't recognize him, we ask instead how they finally do know that it's Jesus. And they recognize him through some intimate gesture, something shared by a close friend, when he serves them a meal, which he did so many times in the Gospels, including the night before he was killed. They recognize him when he offers them some fishing advice, and they remember how he seemed to know everything about everything, including fishing. Mary recognizes him when he calls her by name, because she cannot mistake hearing her name in the voice of a loved one. There was an email that, that circulated a few years ago about how kids defined love, and 4-year-old Billy said, "When someone loves you, the way they say your name is different. You just know your name is safe in their mouth." Mary recognizes Jesus, not by how he looks, but by how he says her name. In all of these stories, it's only when the exchange turns personal that the followers recognize that it's Jesus. Looking at these stories, we can ask ourselves if there are reminders of our loved ones that we fail to recognize, like a quality that we see in other people or seeing someone else continue their work. The women's group at my home church in West Virginia has a cookie sale every year, and on the day of the sale, my mom would be in the church kitchen baking a batch of her delicious cookies. Yes, that's the name of the recipe, delicious cookies. So that the aroma of freshly baked cookies would lure in buyers to the cookie sale that was going on. A member of the women's group still bakes my mom's delicious cookies every year on the day of the sale and texts me a picture so I know that they are carrying on my mom's tradition. My dad had more honesty and integrity than anyone I know, and I see him whenever someone displays those qualities, especially if it's someone who knew him and was influenced by his example. We can keep memories of our loved ones alive by perpetuating their qualities in our lives and by telling stories about them to grandchildren and others who don't remember them or to people who didn't know them, as I have just done with my parents and sharing their stories with you. I heard an interview recently with the writer Julian Barnes. After his wife died, his grief was so deep that he considered suicide, but he realized that he was the best rememberer of his wife, and that if he killed himself, he killed her in a sense as well, because the world would lose everything he loved and remembered about her. We keep our loved ones alive as we share stories, habits, and other memories of them. Our choir anthem described how earth comes back to life every year in the spring and compares it to the way love can bring our hearts back to life from grief. Love is come again like wheat that springeth green. We know that feeling because our love for spouses, parents, friends, and others doesn't die when they do. They remain present with us in powerful, real ways. By continuing to experience Jesus' love after he died, his followers kept alive the love that he had for the world. Now, Christianity has had a mixed record since then, and we have to admit this is not its finest hour. But many people have kept alive the love that Jesus displayed by following his teachings and his example of welcoming strangers, of caring for people who were oppressed by those in power. We see such love in our Unitarian and Universalist ancestors, including those who founded this congregation. We see it in our Catholic, Methodist, and Presbyterian neighbors who gathered with members of this church out here on the Diamond every Friday for the past few weeks, as voices of faith for justice, finding our common ground. Even if we do not share their beliefs about the resurrection, Easter can inspire us to keep alive the compassion and sense of justice, the love for the world that cost Jesus his life, but that his followers would not let die with him. May it be so. Amen. I invite you now to turn to the insert in your bulletin as we read the closing litany. You will see your part is the part marked C for congregation in italics. We're not sure what happened, but we know what it's like when someone appears whose message we feel offers hope, who inspires us with new ways of living. What it's like when they fall short of our expectations, or worse, when they are cut down by the forces of hate and bigotry. We're not sure what happened, but we know what it's like when someone has grown profoundly into our own lives, who seems as much a part of our living as our own breathing. We know what it's like when death takes them from us, perhaps prematurely, and the empty place now in our souls is much like an empty tomb. We're not sure what happened, but we know what it's like to feel sorrow and loss, despair and grief. We know the waves of tears and the thoughts of the past which flow through us. We know that memories and stories begin to feel the emptiness. Our lives are shored up with a different presence, which will live with us all our lives. We're not sure what happened, but we know what it's like to realize, to have it dawn upon us, that what we have known and loved lives on with us and within us forever, a part of who we are. We know that somehow, in our hearts and souls, resurrection is real, not that of the body, but of the spirit, a spirit renewed, even reborn, in the midst of our lives and our living. We're not sure what happened, but we know there is a difficult hope, a faith that through whatever sorrow or grief we are feeling, there is also a growing sense of grace and gratitude, of joy and thanksgiving in the mysterious and abiding astonishment of being human. In this wonder, may we find strength within our own sense of Easter.